Look at the stare of the champion against the challenger. The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
Look at the size of the giant. I mean, Hogan is 6'8".
Andre is 7'5". The bell is gone. This one is officially underway. Look at the look of disdain on the face of Andre.
What's Hogan saying to him, I wonder? What could Hogan possibly be saying to him?
Certainly like to be able to read lips at this point.
He's hulking up right now.
Welcome to Last Match Standing, the podcast where we review, relive, and rank the greatest wrestling matches of all time. As always, I'm Spencer.
I'm the irresistible force.
And I'm the immovable object.
And today, we are coming to you for episode 93 from Pontiac, Michigan, and Pontiac Silverdome. It's WrestleMania 3, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
Let me ask you a question. Where is Pontiac, Michigan? Like, where on the palm?
On the palm?
It's by Detroit?
It's near Detroit.
It's just like just outside of Detroit. Is that the deal?
Yeah, well, it's sort of, a lot of these stadiums are not, Los Angeles is not in Los Angeles a lot of the time.
Gotcha.
Dallas, where the Cowboys play, is in Arlington, actually.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Like, the New York Jets and the New York Giants play in New Jersey.
Welcome to the greater Detroit area.
That's
for WrestleMania 3.
It's kind of like saying you're in Chicago, but you're actually in, like, Waukegan or Aurora. Like, yeah, you're there. But, like, you got to drive 20 minutes to be in Chicago.
Man, lucky bunch of people over in Michigan to get probably the most iconic match in professional wrestling history.
Definitely in WWE history.
I mean, this match was a paradigm shift for the sport.
Well, when you talk about professional wrestling and you talk about what are moments that people know, what are moments that people remember or have seen, it's the slam from this match, right? Whether you're a wrestling fan or not, like, this is the one that people know. And there's a handful of others that people might remember, but this is really the big one. And we're going to get into this match specifically. We're going to get into why we're putting it on our list, because I could hear audibly when we started recording this episode, I heard a collective groan from, I believe, a portion of our listeners that believe that this match should not be on the list. And let me tell you right now, we hear you. Like, we totally get it.
And I heard a collective, finally.
The sigh of relief.
It took us 93 episodes to get this match on the list.
But you want to know why it took 93 episodes? Because there's 93,127 Hulkamaniacs in the Silverdome tonight, Jesse Ventura.
That's right. We planned it from the beginning.
how we plan everything.
That's it. Super well thought out. Months and months and months in the making. All that to say is that it really is. This is a divisive match. This is one that your casual wrestling fan or people that are not even that really wrestling fans are going to be like, oh, this is one of the greatest matches of all time. Your hardcore, your sort of purists, maybe not the case, you know? And I think that's what's so interesting about this show specifically, but also our listener base. Like, we have a good mixture, I think, of those who are going to believe that this belongs and those that believe it won't. You know, similarly, and I'm curious, once we get to the ranking part of this episode later,
it's going to be interesting.
When I think of the toughest ranks that we've had on episodes, the biggest one I think of is Mankind and Undertaker, Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
we did our whole little mini-sode on ranking that episode. And it's because it's similar to this one in that it's a moment that people remember. You know, people remember Undertaker throwing Mankind off the cell and that crazy, crazy moment that followed. And then we had people say this match shouldn't be on the list, but we had other people saying it had to be. You know, if you're going to cover the greatest wrestling matches of all time, how could you not consider that?
Well, I remember someone specifically mentioned King of the Ring 98. If you're covering that, we have to cover this.
And I'm like, no. And I think that's a fair point. Yep. And we put it up on polls, and it's performed well in some polls, poorly on some other polls.
But I don't know. Never, I don't want to say well consistently.
Well,
I don't know
Well, that's the thing is I do feel like there have been votes for
it.
There has never been a poll where we've thrown this up there and we've just gotten total crickets.
Right.
Because I do feel like there are some folks out there who consider this the greatest match of all time for several reasons, and we'll get into those reasons today.
I wouldn't say greatest match, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, there's nothing really bad about it.
Well, I could totally disagree
with
that.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting conversation.
We will talk about it. I know, listen, when we walk in, and just so you guys know that are listening, when we walk in and we start to record these episodes, you know, the three of us will get together at what I'll call Last Match Studios, and, you know, Paul can't help himself.
No.
And we'll start talking about it before we start recording.
Well, yeah, because I have opinions.
And that's a good thing. That's not a knock. But it's just one of those things where I'm listening to Paul talk about it beforehand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I will have things to say.
Here's the thing, though. If I'm planning to come in hot.
Right.
I have to give both of you a heads up.
Right.
And be like, just so you guys know, I got some opinions about this match.
That's true. And we do appreciate
they might upset
that.
You.
Before we get into sort of the meat and potatoes of this one, I just want to say a massive thank you guys for listening. And remember that we're on episode 93. We're on our way to 100.
Oh, only seven away.
That's right. We definitely know that we have not been the most consistent here in season 5. And so we don't want to pretend that we have been. And so we just want to say, we just want to say thank you. We've, you know, obviously had a lot going on. We've talked about it. You know, Paul got married. We talked about this last episode. Lana was just in a show. But Pro Wrestling 225, we've been producing a weekly show that you can find on YouTube at PW225 Unleashed. And so a lot of that has been taking a lot of our time and you know, graciously so.
You forgot to mention one thing, that you are a business owner.
I own a business.
You do a lot. Yeah, I think you do more than me and Landon.
It would be you would be hard pressed to find three guys that aren't physically wrestling that have a tougher schedule.
Well, not yet anyway.
Not yet. That's right. Maybe more on that later. Not for me, obviously. But so we just want to say thanks for following along on the ride. We really, really appreciate it. We are making our way to 100. We're getting there as soon as we can, we promise. Who knows what is to be said after that. But again, that still means that there's time for you to interact with us and let us know if there's matches here. You know, we've got seven to go in season 5. If there are matches you want to see that we have not hit yet, please let us know. Send us a tweet at LastMatchCast. Find us on Facebook the same way. Send us an email, lastmatchstanding@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Any thoughts you have. I imagine, if I had to guess, that if you're listening to this episode, you are going to have some thoughts about Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. So please let us know what they are. Hey, listen, send us a little 60-second voice message. We'd love to throw them into the next episode as a recap. So, well, you know, whatever. We would love to hear from you guys for sure. So all that to be said. Happy to be along for the ride here for episode 93. I don't know if you've ever heard of this match before, but
it's kind of a
who
big deal.
Even is Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant?
Well, you know, Hulk Hogan was born Terry Bollea in Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah, well, and you know, we do those, right? That's one of our favorite things to do is really kind of look at a deep dive of not just the match itself, but the wrestlers. But here's the deal. You know who Hulk Hogan is. If you're listening to this and you don't know who Hulk Hogan is... Who are
How did you find us? That's my question.
Hogan, one other match of his.
But leading up into this match, Hogan was built up like no other star wrestling had ever seen. And the story that they told with this match would write the blueprint for how WWE would build high-profile, big-money matches for decades to come.
Okay, let me ask you about this really quickly while we're here.
Sure.
Because I don't think you're wrong. I think this sort of lays the blueprint. And it was already being laid for Hulk Hogan, right? But, you know, at the end of this match, we hear Ventura say, you know, he's had a great 3 years or whatever. But once again, he gets it done, and I wanted to be like, well, we were just getting started, you know, really, with Hogan at Mania. But you just said something interesting there, that no star had been built up like Hulk Hogan.
No.
And I think that there's – part of that is true. But let me throw Bruno Sammartino at you.
Okay.
I mean, he held the belt for – ever.
7 years.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously wrestling did not hit the mainstream under Sammartino as it did with Hulk Hogan.
Right.
And so that's obviously the argument there. But, you know, there's an argument also to be made that Bruno was the guy the way Hogan was.
Bruno certainly was the GOAT.
Certainly. And I think there's also an argument to be made that Backlund was made the guy, had the belt for several years.
Right, right.
But I think the difference is timing. Mm-hmm. The difference is the technology and the way that people consumed media and went to events was just different in the 80s.
Are we just going to ignore Pedro Morales?
And it'll oh, old Pedro
well, no,
Morales.
Yeah,
obviously.
No. I mean, there's a handful of guys abroad, you know.
And so when guys
the
like
world as well.
When guys like Morales and Sammartino were the champion, there were just few. There was not as much access, not as much opportunity, fewer people had the advantage of being able to see these shows
exactly
the way that Hogan had.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you have to understand, both all three of us and anyone listening, is during Sammartino's 7 year reign, they did house shows.
Yes,
right.
That's all it was.
Like, and he would defend the belt once a month.
And the other side of that coin is it's not just like the people not having access. It was the company, right? The Worldwide Wrestling Federation not having the funding, not having, you know, they weren't quite what the WWF became in the 80s yet. Was, so they weren't telling these long-term stories.
It was still being run the way you would run boxing shows.
Right.
You would book this big card once a month. And you'd have the biggest names you can get on it. I come see him because it's tonight only. WWF champion Bruno Sammartino versus the original Sheik. You got to come see
exactly
it.
Right.
You didn't see Sammartino wrestle free TLC matches against superstars like Ryback on free television.
No.
You weren't going to get it, brother.
If I may quote CM Punk.
You may. We've discussed
it's just,
him a few
it's
times
what I think
on
about
this,
every time
show.
I think about Bruno Sammartino. But anyway.
But so we talked about Hogan, why Hogan is there, and we could debate for hours why Hogan is the guy.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Andre.
Let's talk about Andre the Giant.
And the thing with Andre the Giant is there's an incredibly moving documentary about the life of Andre the Giant.
It is called The Princess Bride. You should take
no. I am the good pirate Robert. There will be no survivors.
In all seriousness.
Elena's like trying to do the thing, and I'm like, no, let me tell you something else.
Let me tell you something, brother. When Cary Elwes got into the ring with Fezzik, you're not going to believe the outcome, brother.
The life of Andre the Giant. I do highly encourage everyone to check out the HBO documentary behind Andre's life.
It's very good.
Streaming now on HBO, but by the time you listen to this episode, it'll just be called Max.
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yeah.
Bring a tissue box. Mm. It's not an easy watch. So I won't go into too much detail into the background of Andre because, you know, that I could never do it better than that documentary. But I can hit the big strokes, right? And some interesting points about
Andre's
life.
Direct quote from Landon Corbin.
I can hit some big strokes.
Yeah, well,
I do what I can.
You must suck it off then.
Oh, boy.
Andre
the Giant was born in the village of Molel. I don't know French.
Join us on episode 94 when we continue to try to pronounce this French village.
He was born in a French village,
yeah,
30
sure
miles
was.
Outside of Paris,
well
weighing
said.
About 11 pounds at birth.
That's not small.
He inherited his height, assumedly, from his Bulgarian grandfather, who was 7 feet 8 inches. Which is absolutely insane.
Well, that's how tall Giant Gonzalez was.
I doubt that.
No, he was.
Seven feet, 8 inches? I don't think.
Did his grandfather use body paint and do the more suits?
No,
I
he didn't.
I hope so. He enjoyed growing up on a farm, so he dropped out of school to focus on farm work, which did not please his family. Luckily, Andre's father had a very influential friend who was able to talk Andre out of not going to school and talk him into the importance of education. That man was famous playwright Samuel Beckett.
Wow.
Nobel Prize winner Samuel Beckett is the man that would pick up Andre and his siblings from their home and bring them to school.
That's awesome.
Wasn't that also a character in Pirates of the Caribbean?
Samuel Beckett.
Not Sam Beckett. There was a Beckett. He was the guy that they shoehorned in the third movie. We killed the fucking, what's it called?
Mm-hmm.
The giant.
Oh, the Kraken thing?
The Kraken. Yeah. He's the one that was able to force Davy Jones to kill the Kraken because we didn't have the budget to have the Kraken appear again.
Right. Landon, I just had an idea. Let's, when you're trying to pronounce the name of the French village, let's cut that audio and replace it with a recording of when you type in Google, please pronounce this, and it's like the little recording of the computer.
Saying,
yeah, exactly. Let's just slice that.
That would be better than me fumbling over it, that's for sure. So Samuel Beckett, dude,
That really is crazy. I didn't know that.
The good news is that having Samuel Beckett be the one to pick you up and bring you to school is that he would never keep you waiting. Little theater joke for you guys.
I want to know if you got that joke. Can you please call me directly? I will give you my phone number. Text me directly if you got that joke, because
Andre the Giant.
Oh, look at the time.
So funny.
Andre excelled in math and loved music, but his size would keep him from being able to play instruments. It made it pretty difficult. He tried to join the army, but the French army could not accommodate his size either. So he turned to sports. He started with rugby, played soccer. I mean, could you imagine standing across the rugby field from Andre the fucking Giant?
No.
I mean, you win. I give up.
I wouldn't fold that easily, but it definitely, like, I'm not checking him.
I'm not checking him.
No, like, Landon, he's all yours.
No, all my, oh, no, you got this, bud. I believe.
No, I'm goalkeeper today. Have fun.
But he was referred to wrestling by a friend. He trained for wrestling in Paris while working as a mover.
Paris.
I would hire him as my mover, please. And he was in such great shape while training. When he returned home to visit his parents, they did not even recognize him. Andre gained popularity in Japan while transitioning into professional wrestling. However, he continued to face many difficulties due to his size while visiting the country. I mean, you think about Japan and everything is so small.
Japan does not accommodate for people over 7 feet very well.
Yeah, it's tough.
Doesn't exactly sound like happy days. It's another Beckett play.
You know, Spencer, I know that lady, you've had a lot of sunny days, but I'm not going to hold that against you, big man.
Oh, no.
I know that's not what you're referring to, but that's where my
I'm so glad your brain went there, though.
Yeah.
Went to sunny days.
I know.
It was around this time in his career where doctors found the true reason for Andre's size, which was indeed not hereditary. However, it was caused by a brain tumor. And he was told that he would likely only live to the age of 40. And could you imagine just knowing that? Like, being told that...
In your early 20s?
Was it in his early 20s? Yeah, I guess it was his 20s. Like, that is a difficult, difficult situation. And yeah. They go into this in more detail in the documentary. Highly recommend you check it out.
Well, I'll say the Big Show had the same tumor, but they were able to fix it with surgery.
See, when that I didn't
Andre
know.
Found out about this in the 70s. They couldn't fix it. It was like, sorry.
But what this did was it emblazoned Andre with a desire to live his life to the fullest and to make the most of every opportunity that was granted him. And in 1971, Andre lost his first match. And one man who was in attendance for the show where he lost that match was none other than VKM Vince McMahon. he saw how much potential that Andre had in his ability to sell, his ability to tell a story in the ring, while also having the obvious spectacle of seeing Andre the Giant perform. So Vince would hire Andre on, and he's the one that branded him with the name Andre the Giant. He essentially treated Andre like a circus act, right? Which is kind of what you do for
he's
a while.
He's an attraction.
He is an attraction. He allowed folks to come in and challenge the Giant at the shows in the 70s. And obviously, Andre the Giant would go on to be undefeated in these challenges. And he would remain undefeated, for the most part, for 15 years in the WWF. By the mid-1980s, Andre's spine began narrowing.
Yeah.
And it was difficult for him to even walk. So he would take some time off after WrestleMania 2, and he would go on to film The Princess Bride.
Oh!
In England.
There it is. WrestleMania 2, greatest show of all time.
Yeah, just ask CJ Goodspeed. January 1987, on an episode of Superstars, Hulk Hogan is presented with a trophy for his incredible accomplishment of defending the WWF Championship for 3 years.
Yes.
And during the celebration, out comes Andre.
Congratulations. You're the champion.
These two were portrayed as longtime friends. And so Andre shakes Hogan's hand firmly in congratulation. Now, Hogan just sort of brushes this off. A little bit of a strange interaction. But Jesse Ventura immediately speculating on commentary. Which, I mean, can we just take a moment?
I know.
To recognize Jesse the Body Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon on commentary in the 80s.
Tremendous.
Absolutely fantastic.
Next level. Yep. Next level. I don't know that anyone has matched them since then. I mean, Bobby Heenan, obviously a great addition to that team, too. But it was Jesse Ventura who was speculating something was very wrong here. This wasn't the same Giant who 3 years earlier playfully poured champagne over Hogan when he beat Sheiky Baby 3 years ago. The following week, Andre was recognized in similar fashion for his undefeated streak in the WWF, though Andre's trophy was not quite as large and illustrious as Hogan's trophy.
It was a participation trophy in comparison.
And it's interesting to note, Andre was not completely undefeated. He was never pinned or submitted in the United States.
Correct.
Which was enough for me to whistle past that fib and, you know, give that man a trophy. He did a great
job. Love an asterisk.
Hogan comes out to give Andre his props, much as Andre did the week before. But in true Hulkster fashion, it comes across as the Hogan Show. He physically cannot cut a promo without putting himself over, which, you know, let's face it, is his charm. Andre, however, doesn't take too kindly to this. He sees straight through this hollow congratulations and walks off. Following this, in an interview scheduled for February 7th, 1987, on Piper's Pit.
I'm going to produce Andre the Giant next week, Hogan. Are you going to show up on my Piper's Pit?
Because everyone expects a man the caliber of Rowdy Roddy Piper to get some answers. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Hogan is introduced first. And when Andre joins them, he's not alone. Standing next to the Giant is a man who had spent years hating him, vilifying him. None other than the manager extraordinaire, Bobby the Brain Heenan.
You don't believe it, Hogan? Why don't you believe this?
Hogan tries to plead with Andre, but Heenan responds by breaking down what has become all too clear to the Giant. Hogan has been using Andre to keep that WWF championship for 3 years. Talking about this promo really doesn't do it justice.
You have to watch.
There's just been so much history between these two here at this point. And when you got guys like Piper and Heenan who are there to help drive up the emotions, you've got a recipe for one hell of a story for a match that honestly, it would probably sell out arenas everywhere in the world without all this emotion.
Yeah, I mean, just the aspect of getting to see Hogan at his peak versus Andre is a big deal.
Really great stuff. And let's give Hogan his flowers here. He did an excellent job selling the heartbreak and getting us emotionally invested. Andre ignores his pleading and says he's coming for Hogan's championship at WrestleMania, and symbolically tears Hogan's shirt off of his chest.
Not only the shirt, he rips the crucifix off
too. Sure does. This is the very thing that Hogan does that represents Hulkamania. And Andre takes it away from him and like Paul said, rips off that cross necklace. Say your prayers, eat your vitamins. So much symbolism here, which consequently actually stabs Hogan during the scuffle, and you can see Hogan's chest is bleeding.
Yeah.
Hogan is left disheveled, brokenhearted, and maybe for the first time, speechless. A little peek behind the curtain here. Hogan actually put some, in preparation for this promo, he put some Vicks Vapor Rub on his fingers.
You can see him actually trying to do it.
And so he like, as soon as his shirt gets ripped off his chest, you see his fingers go up to, like, right underneath his eyes. So he's, like, trying to make himself cry. It's so funny.
But according to him, once the shirt was torn off and, Andre stabbed him with the crucifix, said it didn't take any Vicks Vapor Rub to get those tears, brother.
Like, ouchies.
Like that. Just, like, the pain alone was able to get him to produce the tears.
Never before had we seen such an investment in storytelling leading up to a WrestleMania main event. They even followed this up with a contract signing where Hogan told Andre if he wanted a shot at the title, all he had to do was ask, brother. But Andre doesn't flinch.
Doesn't even blink.
He only reinforces his intentions to take the championship at WrestleMania.
This WrestleMania will be your last. Au revoir.
In an interview outside of WWF television, Andre is asked, why the change of heart? And his response is incredible. He says, everyone keeps making me out to be the bad guy because I'm challenging the champion. I've beaten Hogan 3 times already. All I have to do is beat him 1 more time and I'll be the champion. A piece of this story that I believe gets lost over the years is the risk that Vince McMahon took booking Pontiac Stadium for WrestleMania 3. It was a huge step for the WWF. Vince was putting a ton of faith in Hogan and Andre, the spectacle, to sell out a 100,000 capacity venue. We've established they would sell out arenas anywhere in the world, no doubt. This was another animal. And for 1987... official attendance numbers be damned, that was an incredible spectacle seeing that stadium as full as it was. And it really elevated WrestleMania 3 to what we see it as today as one of the greatest wrestling events ever in the history of wrestling.
So I've made this joke when we covered it for Last Match Standing. I'm sorry, for Last Mania Standing. The record is, they always say 93,173, but the actual attendance is actually around 78,000. That's still an impressive number to put in that building. So everybody's like, oh, there's actually only 78. Like, that's still a lot of fucking people. And they didn't come close to 78,000 again until, like, WrestleMania 32. So take that as you will.
So that brings us to the Pontiac Silverdome, WrestleMania 3. On commentary, as we know, Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse the Body Ventura. Our referee is Joey Morella. I have comments about Joey Morella throughout the course of this match. Our guest ring announcer is Bob Uecker.
Mr. Baseball!
And I'm not mad at it.
I'm not either. I forgot about this.
I did too. And our guest timekeeper is Mary Hart.
Come on, Mary Hart!
Mary Hart. We loved Mary Hart on Last Mania Standing. She did. She was great. And so that's sort of the lineup of who you'll see here leading into this match. And it's...
You know, it's missing one thing. Herb.
Yeah, no Herb.
No Joan Rivers.
No Vanna White, which is a bummer
that's next year.
But it's got all of the imagery and memories that you remember, right? Like, it's got the, you know, they come down to the ring in the
cart.
Ring, you know, in the ring cart.
The ring cart is awesome.
The Federettes.
Federettes.
The Federettes.
I wanted to bitch in the Federettes.
Nope, the Federettes.
I wanted to be a Federette.
I listen.
You weren't alive.
If we, guys.
Uh-oh.
Next trivia punishment. If we can find a Federette costume.
We could probably make one.
Oh, that's it.
Googling
I know some cosplay peeps. We can make this happen.
Federettes. Oh, the best.
I can get that commissioned.
It's got trash being thrown at Andre on his way to the ring and Bobby the Brain Heenan, obviously. And I know we talked about this on Mania, on Last Mania Standing, but Hogan's music. Is this thrown in as a post-edit, or was it live in the stadium at this point?
No. I don't know.
No,
I can't remember.
He was using Eye of the Tiger at this point.
Okay. Well, I know we had talked about it, and so I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I don't know what year he actually started using this, but he was using Eye of the Tiger from, like, 83 until, like, 88.
That makes a lot of sense.
Interesting to think about.
Yeah, it is.
Interesting to think about. But anyway, so, you know, this is a match that I don't think we need to break down. You know, we're in the relive part of of the episode where we're breaking down the match. There's not a ton for us to break down here, so I think we'll go over the broad strokes, but I think it's just very appropriate that the first thing really that you hear after the bell goes off, Jesse the Body Ventura says on commentary, and this might be right before the bell, but both men are in the ring, this is the biggest match in the history of professional wrestling, which we know is an often used exaggeration later, but
yeah,
it feels like it could very be true.
Yeah,
very much be true here.
In this case,
two big men.
At the very least, in 1987, I agree.
Yeah. So we obviously get the iconic, perhaps the most iconic call in the history of professional wrestling, right as these two face off in the center of the ring. Paul,
the irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
And we are underway in the epic main event that is Hogan and Andre.
And I think every epic main event needs an epic stare down.
Yeah.
And this is pretty fucking good.
And this one was incredible.
Mm-hmm. I just love how calm Andre is at all times during this match.
It really puts it to a next level, right? And because this is all about testing the heart of Hogan.
Yeah.
That is the story they're telling. Andre dominates for a good portion of this match, making the crowd absolutely erupt with every flurry of offense that Hogan can muster.
So if you go back and watch all the interviews, all the face-to-face confrontations, Hogan is, you know, he's shaking and he's breathing heavy, and Andre is just calm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it happens at WrestleMania, right? Like, they have a couple of interviews prior to the match. We hear from Hogan twice. We hear from Andre as well, except really we hear from Bobby the Brain Heenan, right? And you're exactly right, Paul, is Hogan is just as amped up as he gets. He's posing in front of the camera.
He's had three lines of coke.
He's screaming. And when it goes to the interview with Mean Gene and Bobby the Brain and Andre, Bobby the Brain Heenan is doing all the talking, you know, which is what you expect. But Andre is doing exactly.
He's standing in. We thought he was a cardboard cutout because he wasn't even moving.
Wasn't blinking almost, like just completely indifferent to everything happening around him.
It wasn't until a question is asked directly to him that he even acknowledges the existence of any other person in the world.
It's really quite fascinating. And so we get to the stare down here at the jump of this match. And it is that. It's still that. It's Hulk Hogan said in his promo prior to the match that not only, you know, like, sure, he's got to, you know, slay the giant, so to speak, but Andre's got to face Hogan and all the Hulkamaniacs. And the start of this match, Andre, calm as can be, staring at Hogan, but the crowd is going insane around Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
And so it felt very much like the real-life personification of that sort of idea that Hogan was saying.
One of my favorite calls is whenever Gorilla says, there's been sort of a hush gone over this crowd. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, the ambient noise of the crowd is so fucking loud.
Mean Gene.
I can barely hear anything.
Mean Gene Okerlund described the crowd noise for this match as a freight train coming through your living room for those who are not in Pontiac and watching it.
Right.
Because, I mean, you talk about how many people, 78,000, 98,000, however many people were in there. How many thousands of people were watching it on pay-per-view? Because this was that accessible. Early on. Oh, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, you know, Hogan goes for a slam from the jump. Like,
yep.
He tries to slam Andre
exactly
very early on. And this is my first complaint about Joey Morella. And who am I to complain about the official for this match?
Leave Santino's dad alone.
That's not Santino's dad.
Thanks for getting my joke.
That's Gorilla's son.
Andre reverses the slam attempt, you know, sort of presses down onto Hogan. And I'm convinced Morella counts to three here.
He does.
He
totally
absolutely
does.
Counts to three. And so it's this sort of awkward moment. But, I mean, it's a lot of pressure. No worries. I get it. I'm not mad at it. It just makes me laugh.
You're mad
not,
at it. It's fine.
It's not the only time that Hogan loses this match. Oh. He loses it twice before we get to the finish where he wins.
So that it's actually very interesting. So Hogan goes for the slam, collapses under the weight, and Hogan legitimately recalls this moment as a oh shit moment, because he literally thought to himself, oh god, this may be a problem. He did not know for sure going into this match if he could lift Andre for
the
finish.
Very few people could.
And additionally, there was the complication of Andre the Giant's back brace. He's wearing a back brace in this match, which he had to wear. And so this not only adds additional weight to his massive frame, but it also required that any bump Andre was going to take had to be very specifically placed, or it would literally cause permanent damage to Andre's back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just can you imagine how much pressure Hogan felt at that moment? And I don't mean having 500 pounds dropped on top of you.
No, and some of that pressure must have transferred onto Joey Morella for him to have to count to three. But anyway, so we get it to this is the first part of the match where Andre is dominating. And
oh, he beats the dog shit out of Hogan.
It's a lot, you know, it's the clubbing blows, it's the stepping on his back.
WrestleMania bear hug.
Well, we're not there yet, trust me.
This is
trust me, I'm getting there, Landon Norman. So
there are much longer bear hugs than this in WrestleMania history.
So we're stepping over the back of Hulk Hogan, and he's also, Andre is looking at Hogan and saying, up!
That's my favorite part of the match.
Which is great. It's great because, again, he has said almost nothing in
I
the build-up
that.
To this, but he's saying, up, you know, like, he's, come on, champion, this is the chance,
yeah,
right?
Come on.
And something that I really appreciate just sort of as a production bit, there's a shot that we get from behind Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Gorilla Monsoon says on commentary, as we look over the shoulder of Bobby the Brain Heenan, and I just loved that.
Love that.
Because it felt very authentic. It was very much like, oh, here's sort of the view of the manager, of the challenger. And the fact that he pointed it out instead of just letting it be what it was, I really appreciate
it. And from a storytelling aspect, it sort of gives you that implication. It paints the stroke of this is the match as Bobby Heenan envisioned it.
Exactly.
Right? We're seeing things play out exactly as the Brain wanted them to.
We're seeing Hogan be dominated, and that reminds me, this is the most physically dominant we've ever seen the Hulker Taker before. I told you he'd laugh. I told you he'd laugh at that joke. That joke was just for you.
Thank
I wrote
you.
It, and I couldn't stop laughing.
I want to go back in and insert in matches that have nothing to do with The Undertaker. This is the most physically dominated we've ever seen The Undertaker. Just in like.
Well, I mean,
let's
be honest. This is the most dominant I've ever seen Hulk Hogan ever. He spends, it's 12 minutes.
12,
he spends
yeah,
8 of it on his back selling.
Don't worry, he still wins.
Right. So.
All right, Cena.
Hogan did it first. So, the first time we get another sort of bit of offense from Hulk Hogan is he's in the turnbuckle and he ducks under a headbutt from Andre, and Andre headbutts the turnbuckle. And so Hogan gets his first offensive flutter since the very beginning of the match where he threw a couple punches before he attempted the slam. And he just absolutely is laying into Andre until he tries to run into him into the turnbuckle and eats a boot.
A big
that size 22, as Gorilla Monsoon pointed out. And then Landon Corbin. God damn it. It's time. 2 minutes and 45 seconds worth of a WrestleMania bear hug.
You mean you could fit a decent sized song in that WrestleMania bear hug?
That is absolutely right.
You could fit an Attitude Era women's match in between this bear hug.
Oh. Oh. Damn!
That was
tell
brutal.
Me I'm wrong.
That was rough.
That tell was me I'm wrong.
Fucking brutal.
Where is the lie?
Here's what I can tell you. Here is what I can tell you. That bear hug, just so you know, was
25%.
23% of this match.
23
almost
and
a
half
full
percent.
Quarter of this match yeah. was this WrestleMania bear hug.
But it told the story.
Sure.
Yeah, this sure. is also the second.
It was domination of Hulk yeah. Hogan.
It's also the second part of the match where Andre wins.
That's absolutely right, Paul. I'm glad you brought it up.
Because
Joey Morella drops Hogan's arm once, and then he drops it again, and Gorilla Monsoon says, one more time, and that's it. And he drops it again, and there it goes. That's three. And then or Ventura mentioned it.
Uh-oh.
And then Morella drops it one more time, and Hogan stops it from falling.
The rules change.
Or what would be the fourth time.
The rules change when Hogan's in the ring.
And Gorilla Monsoon says, well, it has to be three because Joey Morella did the first one very quickly. And
yeah, there was no time to even like think about it.
It's all that to say is Hogan was 0-2 at WrestleMania 3 at this point.
Well, you know,
match.
It's a best of four.
It's a paper, right.
It's pinfalls, best of three.
Pinfalls count as three.
Pinfalls count as three.
That's right.
Yeah, you have to get three pinfalls.
Yeah. So Hogan does break out of the bear hug. And for the second time in this match, here comes an offensive flutter from Hogan, and it's crashed down from Andre, this time with a back elbow into a running Hulk Hogan. And he also sends a kick. Anytime Andre the Giant kicks, it's like, holy cow. That could not feel good. He kicks Hogan, sends him to the outside.
Yeah, kicks him out of the ring.
Yeah, kicks him out of the ring. And we see that same headbutt spot from earlier, except this time when Hogan ducks underneath the headbutt from Andre. Andre is headfirst into the ring post.
Yeah, and whoever was running cameras decided we should not see this moment. We should cut away.
Right.
And then immediately cut back. Go, oh, look, Andre's dazed. Wonder how that happened. It would help if you showed it.
And then Hogan pulls back the floor, the mat. Right,
the ultimate good guy
exposes the concrete, and he tries to pile drive Andre the Giant.
That was never going to happen.
into the concrete, and Andre sort of backdrops him in the softest landing I've ever seen in my whole life.
Well,
Hulk Hogan lands on the concrete.
Yeah, well, he hits the ring apron and then rolls onto the plywood sheets that's covering the concrete.
Right,
floor.
I loved it. But what I love the most about that moment is Jesse Ventura says, I don't know what Hogan was thinking, but that was horrible sportsmanship pulling yeah, back yeah. the mat. Because how many times have we joked about it on the show? Hulk Hogan, the ultimate heel wrestler. Like,
he
the
is.
Ultimate heel wrestler. And I don't understand it. How did he get away with it? I just don't get it.
Because he was presented as the hero, and wrestling fans, by and large, will believe what they're told.
Hulk Hogan has more eye pokes in the history of his career than any wrestler ever to come before or after.
I don't know, man. Roddy Piper made the eye poke like a very deliberate, like, gotcha.
Right. But it was so cool when he used it because it was very specific. Whereas Hogan just all willy-nilly,
rake in the face. Like,
this dude, I'm telling you.
Rake the back.
So we get back in the ring. Andre pushes Hogan or tosses him back into the ring. And Hogan is able to build some momentum off the ropes and he knocks the big man down.
Finally.
Andre off his feet. The crowd goes nuts. You know, on commentary, they're saying this is the first time they've ever seen Andre get knocked off his feet like that. It's wild. And then Paul, the big finish. He's hulking up.
Can he do it? Can he do it? Oh, he slammed the big guy. Here comes the big leg. 1, 2, 3. Hogan's still the champion.
The crowd.
Ape shit.
Berserk. they're going nuts. Hogan wins, as we know, one of the most iconic matches in the history of professional wrestling. Andre the Giant and Bobby the Brain Heenan, dejected, leave on the cart, trash thrown their way the whole time.
Like, don't throw garbage at Andre.
And Hogan poses for an eternity until WrestleMania 4.
Yeah, I was laughing because if you watch this on YouTube, the whole video is like 16 and change. But, like, the match is done around, like, 12, that you said.
Right, and we know 23% of the match is the bear hug.
And so it's 4 minutes of just Hogan posing. And I'm like,
right.
I'm like, okay, I get it, but, like, make the video 13 minutes.
We get it.
So
after
it's,
60 seconds.
It's like 60 seconds of Hogan posing, the shot of Heenan and Andre on the cart with the garbage being thrown at him.
Hogan recognizes this as the greatest moment of his entire life. And he gives Andre all the credit. Would it not be the greatest moment of your entire life? Come on.
He's got children.
Well, he's kind of disowned one of them.
Come on, children. Scoop slamming Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3. Think about it. It's an easy choice.
It just makes me laugh.
I believe this was actually before either one of those kids was born.
I knew he would say that having Shawn Michaels sell for him at SummerSlam was the best moment of his life.
If you have not sat down and watched that match, there's one specific moment where he does the big boot and he turns around when he turns around to the crowd like, yeah, I did. He turns back around and Shawn is back up on his feet and you see Hogan go, what the fuck? That's whenever Shawn takes a bump, stands up, and does a fucking somersault, and then rolls out of the fucking ring where he does another somersault.
Incredible.
And Hogan is just like, doesn't know what planet he's on.
The best, Layden, what is the best moment of Hulk Hogan's life? Is it this scoop slam? What else would it be?
Wouldn't it be? Or was it okay? Is it the affair? Is it the
whenever he won his lawsuit against Gawker?
What are you trying to? What are you poking at? Like, what is it?
It was when his. No.
I was setting up for a joke, and you didn't disappoint. Thank you.
I was gonna make a joke, and I'm like, even for me, this is too dark. I'm gonna stop.
Is it the getting stabbed in the face with a pen by Vince McMahon? Is it?
I really and truly and honestly, I really think the best moment of Hogan's life. No, I'm being serious.
It's the debut of Mr. America.
It's Mr. America passing the lie detector test. What a moment in his life.
It's Hogan. No.
I don't know why you said that's the best day in Hogan. That has nothing to do with Hogan. What are you talking about?
That's so
No, he did pull up the mask on the final appearance.
We did the big wink,
and they didn't air it until he was like, fuck this, I quit, brother. And they aired it the next week.
But all this to say, Andre did not have to do that for Hogan.
No,
but he did. And it's been reported that Hogan was legitimately concerned that Andre was not going to do that.
Oh yeah,
for Hogan.
It's in the documentary because they do a lengthy part. They talk to Hogan, and he explained that they had sat down, they had gone over the ideas that he had. Andre was drinking, as he was known to do. Hogan laid his ideas out, and Andre basically nodded and said, "Okay, boss." And then they didn't talk at all the day of, and Hogan was a nervous wreck the entire day because Andre was in his locker room and wouldn't let anybody in. He's panicking. And he's saying, if you actually watch the stare down, when Hogan is talking, he's not talking. He's literally mouthing like,
are we good?
Are we good? And Andre just stares at him.
Yep.
And so it wasn't until he basically goes for the scoop slam.
Yep.
And Andre falls on him and he goes, okay, boss, let's go to work.
Yep. Andre had just kind of shelled up, was not talking to Hogan the whole time, and Hogan was a nervous wreck. He goes up to Vince and is just like, Vince, can you go talk to him and let me know, like, are we going to do the thing, or, you know, are we going to go through? Because Hogan wrote up the whole match in advance, and he gave it to Vince and said, is Andre going to do this? Is he going to lay down for me? And all Vince said was, Andre's going to do the right thing.
Oh, I love that.
You have to know the 80s, Vince. Andre is going to do the right thing, Terry.
Because the thing is,
quite frankly,
Andre's going to do what Andre's going to do. Yeah. I mean, how are you going to tell that man?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, we're talking about an Andre the Giant that legitimately was shooting on Big John Studd at WrestleMania 1.
And so,
yeah. if he doesn't want to do business, there's nobody that's going to make him do business.
But the thing is, the veracity of this admittedly fun story has been questioned. But it definitely adds to the tension and makes for an interesting discussion, whether or not it's 100% true, how much of it is true, unsure. But fun story, great match. Favorite moments?
My favorite moments actually have nothing to do with the match and all have to do with Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura.
Yeah. Really tremendous work.
Which I feel bad saying that, but like, because.
Well, I mean.
Hogan's working his ass off in this match, whether you want to admit that or not. He is.
Favorite moments. I mean, it's the iconic slam is sort of like the thing.
Yeah,
right?
How do you not?
You'd be hard pressed. I actually really enjoy the opening salvo with the failed scoop slam where Andre just lands.
Yeah,
on.
I love that. I love the opening stare down. I almost love more than the slam.
Yeah, I agree.
It's got Rock Hogan feel, you know.
Yeah.
But this came before,
right?
Yeah. And not just those two. And I think I may have mentioned this on Last Mania Standing when we covered this 4 years ago.
Is
the crowd
really been that long?
It's all about the crowd during that opening stare down. They are at a fever pitch from minute one of this match,
and it adds to it. A crowd that was not burnt out by Savage and Steamboat, which once again, guys, this is the third time we have done back-to-back matches from one card.
Holy shit, I didn't even think about that.
Randy Savage and, well, first of all.
Wasn't back-to-back, was it?
It sure wasn't.
Damn!
it was a couple matches earlier.
Oh, well,
it's so bright in the arena still. During...
It is, but the fact that we, I didn't even think
it's on
about
the same
that
card,
was also a WrestleMania
match. We've only done
match.
That a couple of times. We've only covered matches from the same card, I think, twice.
Yeah, it hasn't happened often, and so this is our second match from WrestleMania 3, and Savage and Steamboat, just for reference, is our ninth greatest all-time through 92.
I think
it's time, friends. Here we are for the 93rd time.
Okay.
Where in the world do we rank Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant for the WWF Championship at WrestleMania 3?
All right. I know we all have opinions. I know we all feel certain ways about this match.
But his is right.
Paul said, here's the correct opinion.
Here's my first impression.
Okay.
I think that from bell to bell, this is a better match than the Rockin' Hulk Hogan had. I think it is a better match bell to bell. It's definitely shorter. And I think that Andre was more capable than Hogan was at WrestleMania 18 at this point. But I would not rank this higher than 87.
87.
Okay, hold on. That's so confusing. Because you're saying that this is a better match than Rock Hogan, which is ranked at 73.
Yes.
And so you're saying this is the better match than that, but you're going to rank it 14 spots lower?
Did you mean 67?
No, 87.
Okay, so what's your reasoning behind saying it's better than a match and then putting it lower?
Because when I look at 73, which is where we have The Rock and Hulk Hogan, would I put this above Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn? No. Would I put this above the first Elimination Chamber match? No. Would I put this above War Games, Sting Squadron, Danger Alliance? No. Would I put it above Alundra Blaze and Bull Nakano? Absolutely not. Would I put it above Booker T and Chris Benoit? Absolutely not. Would I put it above CM Punk and The Undertaker? No. Canadian Stampede is where I start to get to that point where I'm like, okay, now we're getting into...
Yeah, I would say that would be my floor, is Canadian Stampede.
Yeah,
you know, I think it's definitely going to beat that. For me, it beats out CM Punk and Undertaker. I was never a huge fan of that match to begin with. I would go higher, I think, personally.
Than 83?
I would go higher than 80. I think it ends up, you know, less than the 50s. But I would put it a little bit higher than that. I'm sort of looking around the 1992 Royal Rumble area,
which was currently 68
on our list out of 92 so far.
Okay.
It's just for reference, you know, I made this comment earlier in comparison to the King of the Ring Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah.
And that match currently sits at number 49 on the list. And I think there's something to be said. You know, what's the difference? You know, those are two, again, two of the most replayed moments in the history of professional wrestling, especially here in the U.S.
The difference, I think it all comes down to the thumbtacks.
It was the thumbtacks. Yeah, that's really what it was.
Well,
it comes down to the fact that Mick insisted on continuing to give everything he had, despite the fact that he should have been in the hospital.
If the story is heart, Mick Foley demonstrated 10 times the heart that Hogan did.
Because that was...
Even in losing.
Like, take this how you will, that was real.
Right.
He wasn't acting. He was actually seriously fucked up, but he knew that the audience had an expectation for a Mick Foley match, and he was not going to lay down until he felt like he had reached that level.
Well, I think there's something to be said as well about the impact that that match had on the careers of Mankind and The Undertaker.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know that The Undertaker goes on to do what he does without that moment. He was already, obviously, he was well on his way. You know, like, he had had a big career to that point.
A two-time WWF champion. He had already main-evented WrestleMania.
But I think, to your point, is that match solidified his legacy as the king of Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. Right.
And no one could touch Taker in Hell in a Cell. Just look at what he did to Mankind.
And it win or lose, that stayed the case for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
You know, because he lost several. We know he lost a handful of Hell in a Cell matches.
He's lost three?
But you never wanted to face him.
But you never wanted to face him. So. And Mankind, again, like, Mankind's whole career is built off of moments like that. And that's number one.
Oh, for sure.
You know, these two legends of the game. And so, you know, going back to WrestleMania 3 now, we're towards the end of Andre's career. But again, you know, we're end of Andre's career. Hogan's career is he's getting to the peak of Hulkamania. Like, this is sort of where we're at. And Hogan obviously would wrestle for another 12, 13 years regularly, consistently.
Yeah. So pretty much 88, 89. Well, he takes up a good bit of 89 to go film the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, that's why that's why Savage wins at 88, because he was going to film No Holds Barred.
Mm.
And so he comes back at 89, champion again, 90, loses the belt to Warrior because he's going to go film another movie. 91, the whole year. 92 is that weird year where he's like, I don't take steroids. And then he's gone for a year. then he comes back 60 pounds lighter. But, you know, 94 to like 2005, full-time wrestler.
Yeah, he's on and off our screens for the most part.
Yeah.
But, you know, is it fair to say that Hogan and Andre, would they be remembered as largely as they are without this moment? Like, therein lies the question. If this slam never happens.
I think if Andre carried on the next couple of years pretty much as his undefeated giant, he'd be remembered as the giant that just never lost.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is the moment that solidifies both of them in what they are. And it's hard, right? Because they do have so much legacy leading into this. You know, obviously Hogan was the guy, and he was going to be the guy for many years regardless of what they did here. But this is the moment. You know what I mean? It's the paradigm shift in pro wrestling. And so, no, I don't think there is a world where if this match doesn't happen, Hogan is the star that he is after.
Right.
Is it the paradigm shift or is it the Death Rider?
Which one? You know?
Because they're the same goddamn movie. Which one? How do I know which one is which?
So many times. Sorry, you know, when we talk about how we rank things, why we rank things the way we do, so often we talk about legacy. You know, that's a big part. And if when you have a conversation about legacy, it starts at this match, right? Like, it's this match helps define a legacy for these two guys. When you talk about the ring work itself, there are probably of 92 matches, I'd say probably 90% of them have better ring work, if not more.
Yeah.
That's
what I was kind of getting at when I was saying, like, I would not put any of these other matches underneath this because of work rate alone. Like, if you're going to give me a straight face and say that Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn don't have a better work rate than Hogan?
There is a bear hug that lasts a quarter of the match.
Yeah.
And not a singular other wrestling move in this match. It's all strikes.
There's a couple. Andre does a couple of scoop slams.
There's no maneuver. There's no holds. Is the point I'm getting to?
It's all like
I mean, there were some body slams and things of that nature. But
that was the style of the time.
It was. And so 80s, that's not me saying that. It's just for comparison's sake. It's completely different from so much of what we have
List. What's a match?
Could be said about Hell in a Cell.
What's a match from this time period that we've done? I'm thinking Nick Bockwinkel and Kurt Hennig. Might even be from the same year.
Yeah, I mean, that one was just a masterclass in holds in professional wrestling.
Where do we put that one? I want to say that one's...
It's 1986.
So it's a year prior.
Mm-hmm.
That's number 46. I would never dream to go that high, but I'm just saying, for comparison, here's a contemporary match from the same era.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still living around Royal Rumble 92 land.
68?
It's got enough prestige and importance to, you know, take it out of the 90s, the 80s, the bottom of the list.
Okay.
But I'm starting to get really caught up probably around, you know, 59, that sort of 60 standard bearer right now is Aja Kong versus Manami Toyota.
I'm not going over that.
It's tough. But I could see an argument for just legacy-wise going over a Kurt Angle versus Desmond Wolfe from Final Resolution.
So you're looking at 61?
Maybe. Maybe 61.
I could be talked into that. Spencer, what do you think?
Yeah. It's so crazy to me because this is a match that I've seen obviously more than a handful of times, but it's not one I want to rewatch. You know, it's not like I'm like, oh God, I want to watch some wrestling. Let me go watch Hogan and Andre.
My attitude wasn't I didn't want to rewatch it. My attitude was my mind on whether or not this belongs in a list of this was made up, and I said, all right, fine, I'll give it a chance. I'll give it a fair chance, and I was not disappointed when the match was over.
I think it belongs on our list.
Yes.
Because it's the match.
Okay, I agree. So what if we place it strategically as a standard bearer, as a you've got to beat this in the impact that the legacy had, or at least come close to it, to be considered over 50? Like, if we put it at 50, strategically.
Well, as I walk up the list from where we are, Cactus Jack, Triple H at the Rumble, great match, ton of fun, one of our very first episodes.
Mm-hmm. Still one of my personal favorites.
Right. Wrestling fans remember it fondly.
They do.
Mainstream, people don't know it as much. DIY Revival, again.
The thing is, wrestling is so much more than just wrestling.
It is. And so it checks all the boxes except for the work rate. Mm-hmm.
Here's my problem, though. Right underneath number 50 is Kurt Angle Undertaker, which is just the most pure wrestling match I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, but no one knows about it.
Right.
Well, because it's on a B show.
It's Kurt Angle Undertaker is one of those that, like, again, it's a favorite of wrestling podcasters. You know, it's a favorite of people that sort of go back and watch these things because it is so good. But it was sort of a lightning in a bottle,
like a
match that happened and was a bridge to something else.
Exactly.
But you know, it wasn't lightning in a bottle. AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura, Wrestle Kingdom 10.
It was so good they had to run it back.
That's right.
They'd run it back and do it not as good.
Let's see this again, but watered down.
This is going to be a trilogy. By the way, the blow-off is going to be on SmackDown.
Just the idea of, well, I mean, and to be fair, we get that at WrestleMania 4. We get Hogan and Andre again,
and it's like a watered down version.
So, like,
it's actually more compelling because it's like 5 minutes long.
Something to be said about that.
So, yeah. Actually, what I'm looking at now is not 50, but what about 40?
No.
Right? Because we get to the we get to the point it. Where you have everything I'm seeing over 40 does have that legacy component that really pushes it up past what I feel like this match would do, in addition to the work rate.
I can't in good conscience put this above Jay White and Kota Ibushi or Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. I can't.
Shawn Michaels, Undertaker from Bad
the,
Blood.
The original Hell in the Cell. I think this one is the more important match than a Hell in the Cell, but that's a personal preference. That is a personal preference.
Again, this, and we've run into this over and over again making this list, it's what do you come to wrestling for?
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I think if you at depending on how you ask this question, is this one of the greatest matches of all time? Depending on how you ask that question, I think all of us might say it's not one of the greatest matches of all time. And I think a lot of, depending on how you phrase it, might say it's top five. Just depending on what you are thinking about in that moment.
Top five WrestleMania moments, but not top five wrestling
moments. But again, Paul, what did you just say? You said moments. I didn't say moments. I said matches. And that's the difference, right? We've had this conversation on this podcast before. Moments versus matches. Our list is the list of the greatest wrestling matches of all time. It's not a WWE, oh my God, top 100 moments.
Yeah.
Correct. But what makes a wrestling match?
Moments. I get it. I see what you're saying.
Well,
I'm
not just moments, but the story it's telling from beginning to end, not just what is physically happening in the ring, but the story they're telling with what they're doing.
They do tell a compelling story in this match.
But let me ask you.
There are moments that I'm like, okay, guys, if Andre can't go 12 minutes and don't get in a 12-minute match, let's shave 3 or 4 minutes off. That way, maybe we don't do a bear hug at all. He does it for a minute.
Yeah, but that wasn't so. That was a sign of the times.
I know, it was.
So let me ask you this. Outside of the slam, really and truly, do people remember this as one of the greatest wrestling stories ever told?
Stories, maybe.
Probably not.
You know, you're saying that wrestling, what makes a match is storytelling and great stories. Mega Powers Explode. That was a bigger story.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That was a bigger story than this.
Better match, too.
And a better match.
Now, when I say probably not, I'm just saying you're right in that the moment is remembered more than the story, and there are other stories that are more memorable. But I do think there is a percentage of folks who will remember it for the story.
Yeah, I'm not saying they won't.
Just not as many as probably a lot of other matches.
Right. And so that's kind of, for me, then, what's going to knock it down.
Sure.
Some of the matches, because then... To me, it feels more like we're ranking a moment versus this thing in its entirety.
I am trying to rank the match in its entirety. That's why I was more in the 60s than, like, say, the 40s.
And again, there will be listeners unhappy regardless of where we put this.
Sure.
And so we want to hear from you guys listening. Where would you put this match? Like, where in the world?
It's a tough one.
Honestly,
on a list of 93 of the greatest wrestling matches of all time, where does this go?
Honestly, as a standard bearing match, 55
is Bryan Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness.
55.
That one's a hell of a heavy hitter. It probably leaves quite a legacy for ROH fans to look back on.
Especially now that both those men are now signed with.
Yeah, and what's above 55 is Kofi Mania.
Mm-hmm.
This goes over Kofi Mania for me. I'm still floating around 40.
55.
Yeah.
That is my best, last, and final offer.
Nearing dangerous territory where we're going to need a minisode to write this match. And so I don't want to get there. I think we can do it within the context of this episode. The jump to 40. I don't know that I'm so strong on the jump to 40 as I am happy at 50. Like I would put it personally, if I'm going to throw out a number, and I hate to compare it so directly, but it's how I feel. I'd put it at 48, one match above Mankind and Undertaker.
Sure.
Okay.
Again, a moment that we sort of ranked, and
you'd put it right
below Flair and Shawn.
Sorry, I love you.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, no, you mean 49.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because we're talking
it would be
about
the new the new 49.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it being right below something that is the end of a legacy at WrestleMania.
It's the end of another legacy.
Two legacies
ending at WrestleMania.
I like it. I can agree with 49. It. There are a few things that are above that that I'm just like, you know, but I'm comfortable with it.
49.
And I'd be interested to hear how people react to that.
Yes. So, as it turns out, I will
be turning off my social media for the next 2 weeks.
Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant is the 49th greatest wrestling match of all time.
Fight me.
Take it or leave it.
Send any and all disagreements and our issues.
Our list is objective. It is correct. And your opinions don't matter.
We just deliberated just longer than the match, okay?
That is true. Guys, please, again, let us know what you think. You can do that at Last Match Cast on Facebook and Twitter. Also, send us an email at lastmatchinning@gmail.com. However you want to interact with us, we would love to hear from you on where you would rank Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
And hey, do you like pro wrestling? You should check out Pro Wrestling 225 Unleashed, where we build the show. Spencer and I are your commentators. Paul is filming. Hope edits all of the shows. You should check it out on YouTube at PW225 Unleashed.
Hope is not just an editor. She is head of production and is also a floor cam operator as well. Give her credit.
We really, really, really bend over backwards to make this show happen. It is real indie wrestling from right here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and the surrounding area. Please, please check it out.
Until episode 94, I'm Spencer.
I'm Paul.
I'm Landon.
And this is Last Match Standing.